Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Two superstars in veterinary medicine. Later we'll talk about older cats. The book is called Nine Lives Are Not Enough with Dr. Mary Gardner. Dr. David Tweet, I think it's safe to say, is a legend in veterinary medicine. Professor Emeritus, Colorado State University, College of Veterinary Medicine, boarded in internal medicine, an expert on liver function and liver disease and dogs in particular, and he has literally authored the books on all of this stuff or edited similar books, which veterinarians to this day frequently refer to. I was talking to you, Dr. Tweed, at a function we were both at the North American Veterinary Community's VMX Veterinary Conference. You came up to me. I was chatting with another veterinarian, and she walked away instantly because she was that's David Tweed you're talking to. I said, I know that. He's been a friend for a long time. But you were telling me about something that I had no clue about, and in a sense, it is kind of scary, and you are saying let's talk about this with the general public. So you'd agree, I assume, in general, very much trust major players in the dog and, for that matter, cat food arena. Do you agree with that?
I'd agree. Yes.
Having said that, we're learning things all the time. I'm on the board of the Every Cat Health Foundation, and we are looking at something that goes in the cat foods, and we're seeing if that has anything to do with kidney disease, which is so prevalent in cats as they age. And that's very public. I mean, and Mars came together with Purina, first time ever, as far as I know. These two giants have come together and said, well, we're curious about something. We don't know if there's a there, but there might be, so let's investigate. Well, you have, and your colleagues have investigated, and tell us what you have determined over, apparently, the past couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Working with some of my other colleagues, both in the U.S. and actually a colleague in the U.K. as well, we have identified that many dogs are affected with and actually sometimes die from too much copper in their liver. And copper is a mineral that the body needs for many, many enzyme functions. And it appears that some dogs cannot tolerate the amount of copper that they are taking in through their diet. And that is resulting in concentration in their liver and causing liver damage and can end up in what we call end-stage liver disease. And this is a problem that we believe actually started to manifest itself in 1997 when the regulatory agencies changed the recommendation of the type of copper supplement to be used in the food.
So the pet food, I'm stopping you here because I just want to understand this. So the pet food companies are just doing essentially, and we're talking about the major pet food players here. A lot of the others, frankly, the truth is, no matter how they market themselves, they're just in truth following what Hill's, Purina, and the various Mars brands do. I believe you'd agree with that. However, let's back up a bit and talk about what is copper in diets? I didn't really know much, and still don't, about copper that's required for all of us and for our dogs and other mammals similarly. Can you explain?
Yeah. Copper is a nutrient, a mineral that must be taken in orally. And gets into the liver and then goes out to the rest of the body for many enzyme reactions and other metabolic processes that is essential for life. And so all foods must contain copper, or you will develop a copper deficiency, which can cause disease as well.
I don't want to put you on the spot here. I know you're not a nutritionist per se. Incidentally, I am curious about what the veterinary nutritionists think of all this, but I'm curious, for humans, where do we get our copper from in our diets, or is it trace elements of lots of different foods?
Yeah, all copper is found in plant materials. It's found in animal products. It is, if you drink water that goes through your copper pipes, you get just a little bit of copper as well that way.
Hmm.
So it's in the environment. We take it in. Our body can regulate the amounts of copper and get rid of the excess copper if we take in too much.
However, what you're suggesting is that currently dogs aren't getting enough of it. Does it affect all, does this problem, does this deficiency in, or overabundance, rather, of copper, does it impact, it impacts the liver, but does it do so for some dogs more than others?
Yes, that's what we're finding. We believe that there are some dogs that cannot tolerate the higher levels of copper that we think they're now getting supplemented into their foods. And so they will develop liver disease because they can't get it out of their liver. There are some dogs that do just fine. And so there may be some genetic aspects that may play a role in that. For do know that the Labrador Retriever, the Doberman Pinscher, the Dalmatian, the West Highland White Terrier, are some breeds that we do see a high incidence of copper accumulation. And what we found is in those dogs, if we recognize the disease, we can put them on medication to get the copper out of their liver so it doesn't cause damage. And then we can put them on special diets that are very low in copper content, and they often will do very, very well.
Do you have a dog, Dr. Tweed?
I've got two dogs.
All right. Let's say your dogs, whatever breed or mixes they are, live to the age of 74. Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice,
yeah.
Wouldn't it?
So the way we currently feed our dogs, is it that some dogs just aren't going to get this, period, because of their genetic predisposition? Or if we waited long enough and dogs lived to 74, that we'd see it in all dogs?
Yes, and I don't think we know the answer to that. That is the $360,000 question. I do know that I did a small little study where I did liver biopsies in dogs in Malaysia, and these were dogs that were street dogs that likely never had commercial dog food.
Mm-hmm.
And we measured the copper levels in those dogs. And then we measured copper levels in some rich dogs that were fed a commercial diet in States. What we identified is that the U.S. dogs had about four times the amount of copper in their liver than these feral dogs, street dogs from Malaysia.
Interesting. Well, we're going to take a commercial break, and then when we come back, what is most important is what do you suggest pet parents do? And what are you and colleagues doing about this to try to change all this? And what do the pet food companies think of all this? And also, what do veterinary nutritionists, so you're an internal medicine specialist, you know about this stuff, but so do nutritionists for sure. What do they think about all this? And we'll find out when we come back on WGN. Dr. David Tweed, a legend in veterinary medicine, professor emeritus, Colorado State University College of Veterinary Medicine, boarded in internal medicine. If you happen to have a book about internal medicine in your home, probably you don't, about dogs, I'm sure Dr. Tweed's name is in the book, if not on the cover of the book. And we're talking about what seems to be happening and has happened now for several years, too much copper, an element required by mammals, I think, that is in our dog food. Now, why can't you alluded to earlier that people, if they get too much, can just urinate it out? And why can't dogs do that?
Well, they can to a certain extent, but when you provide too much copper to overwhelm the system, then that can result in accumulation, and that can be too much, can be toxic.
How is it diagnosed? I mean, do I go to the veterinarian and say, my dog just isn't feeling well? Or is it more likely that this shows up in blood work? How do you know?
Yeah, you know, that's a real problem because it's a difficult to completely diagnose it. Certainly, the first thing that we will often see will be abnormal liver enzymes, one in particular that we refer to as ALT. That's probably the first one that we see that becomes abnormal. Persistent abnormal liver enzymes would be a clue that they should be investigated. And the only way you can definitively diagnose this is with a liver biopsy and to quantitate the amount of copper that is present in the liver and the type of damage that is taking place. Unfortunately, that becomes a very involved, invasive, and expensive process for the pet owner.
Now, if the biopsy is done and it's determined there's some damage, from what I understand with my basic knowledge, livers do regenerate themselves. So can that happen given time and the appropriate diet?
That can. And in fact, if identified very early, we can use what we call copper chelators, which are drugs that we may use for 3 or 4 months to rid the liver of excess copper. And then what we found is putting dogs on a low copper diet, that prevents reaccumulation of copper in their liver. And so some dogs can live a completely normal life as long as they're fed a low copper diet.
All right, so what do the veterinary nutritionists, who certainly know about all this stuff, what do they think? Are they in agreement with you?
I think most veterinary nutritionists are. I can't speak for everyone. One of the members of our, we call it the copper team that we, you know, are trying to change is a veterinary nutritionist. And I think if you survey veterinary nutritionists around the country, many of them, one of the things that they often will do is formulate diets that are low in copper for patients that have excess copper accumulation.
Well, sure. So do you suggest for people who have breeds that are predisposed, and it's a longer list than you gave on the radio, I suspect, that they find a diet that you're talking about that is low in copper? Or should they continue to do what they're doing?
Yeah, unfortunately, all commercial dog foods must meet AFCO's requirements. And this is a branch to the FDA that tells you how much protein should be in a meal, how much vitamins and minerals and so forth, and also how much copper should be in the meal. And so there aren't really good diets out there that are low in copper. There are special prescription liver diets that are low in copper, but all commercial diets contain what the regulatory agencies say it should, which we believe is way too high. So I think if you have one of those predisposed breeds, you know, just doing due diligence, seeing your veterinarian yearly for maybe routine health checks, and if you can identify problems going on in the liver early on and you investigate those, certainly we can, it's a treatable, very treatable disease. But if left undiagnosed, and in fact, I'm dealing with a dog right now, an old leash sheepdog that's only 4 years old that is in advanced liver failure.
Wow.
And we're working on that dog right now,
so,
as we speak.
Frankly, do the pet food companies, the big players, the ones that matter in many ways, Purina brands and the Mars brands and Hill's or Science Diet, do they agree with what you're saying?
I haven't got an official statement from those big players. They know we are doing, and I think they understand that there may be changes that are needed in the diet. However, they are still bound to follow the current recommendations by AFCO, which is the regulatory agency. So it's not anything new to the big players as far as.
All right, so what you're saying is they're aware of it, but they have not total control because they have to follow what the government regulation tells them to do. That's AFCO. Is that the American Association of Feed Control Officials? Do I remember what that acronym is correctly?
Absolutely, that is correct.
Okay, so they govern recommendations, not mandates, that pet food companies must follow, but all those pet food companies forever have been saying we follow AFCO standards, and it's kind of a catch-22. So it seems to be that if you can get everyone in the room at the same time with all you scientists and all your official papers, and this has been published. This is not just Dr. Tweed out there, friends, standing alone, waving a flag. You have a group that you mentioned, the Copper Team or whatever it is, but these are a lot of veterinarians who publish all the time with a lot of letters after their names, including you, who are saying this. So it comes from a credible source, and it's concerning, and it's something we need to do. I'm not sure, though, as pet parents, we can do much except be aware for our own dogs to make sure their liver enzymes are tested at least once a year, I presume, is what you'd recommend, Dr. Tweed.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And we will keep track. We're out of time, but we will keep track of this story. And I am there for you if there's news regarding any of this. Dr. David Tweed, thank you so much. And I'm sorry we are just out of time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So it turns out cats suffer pain way more. Arthritis pain, that's what I'm talking about. Way more than we ever thought. Not only definitely older cats, but not only older cats. Definitely overweight, obese cats, but not only overweight, obese cats. We'll talk to the gentleman who did the study about all this, Dr. Duncan Lascelles, and we'll also learn about consent in dogs, a sort of new way to think about training dogs, having the dogs, in a sense, say, it's okay, I'll go ahead and do that. That is all next week, right here, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. When I woke up this morning, I thought, you know, nine lives are not enough. Dr. Mary Gardner is right about that. For a very long time, Dr. Gardner, you've been focusing on older animals. This book, of course, is about cats, right? It's been a while.
I think specifically since 2010, I've been dealing with older pets and helping their families manage them. But just in my personal life, I've always been drawn to the skinny and stinky and the weak and the wobbly since the 90s. I really love them.
I know you had one of those Facebook fundraisers for the Gray Muzzle Organization.
I did.
I know, and I tried. Actually, I need to talk to you about that because I tried to give and I couldn't navigate. Facebook wasn't letting me go there. More importantly, what is the Gray Muzzle Organization?
It's a wonderful organization that helps charities and shelters raise money for caring for senior pets that are needing adoption. So many are in shelters, and they may need a dental cleaning, or they may need something done, and it might be off-putting to a family to know that they're going to adopt a pet like that and then have that immediate need. And so they help with some medical care and also to get those pets adopted, and but they're all senior pets.
And they're the ones that are the most difficult to adopt, right?
Yes, unless you've got Dr. Mary Gardner in town, and that's the ones that want to adopt. But they can be, because people don't, you know, they're worried that they don't have enough time and they're, you know, going to adopt a pet that they've got maybe 2 years with. But I got to tell you, 2 months is sometimes enough, and I love it.
And your passion then extended to what you co-created Lap of Love.
Yes, yeah. So Lap of Love is an in-home euthanasia service around the United States, and it's to provide families a way to say goodbye in the pet's favorite place, which is the home or backyard.
And it's especially true for cats, as far as being in the home.
100%. Cats, yeah. You know, even us humans, we'd rather say goodbye in the home, but cats absolutely. And what's great is not only is the cat at home and comfortable, but they could be other cats that in that house to come say goodbye and be a part of that, you know, experience.
Do you think that happens?
100%. I can't scientifically prove it,
yeah.
But I have been in thousands of cat euthanasias and dogs where cats are present, and
yeah.
There's something that happens.
They know.
And it's,
yeah.
And it's, I don't want to say weird because it's magical almost. And there'll be cats that, oh, they don't like strangers, and they'll just come over to me and sit on my lap and be a part of the experience or
wow.
Lick the other one's, you know, head. It's just, it's incredible.
Well, I'll tell you, when Lap of Love was created, I said publicly, and will say it anywhere I go, just extraordinary, the service you provide. And then the pandemic hit.
Mm, yes.
And that extraordinary service became necessary
yes.
for so many people. So thank you for what you co-created,
yeah.
I should say.
Yeah.
And thank you for that, because it's made such a difference for thousands and thousands
yes.
of pets and people
yes.
also. So what is this book about?
Oh, so I really wanted to focus on the geriatric cat. There's a couple of books already out there for senior cats, older cats, or just cats in general. But really, when a cat becomes fragile and they've got decreased immune system, they're dependent more on their caregiver, they've got multiple problems, they're not just one problem that they're dealing with, it takes a different level of care. And I really wanted to have a manual, a practical guide for a cat owner to feel comfortable reading, and it's easy reading. I try to make the medicine easy.
You do. It's a great book.
Thank you.
And it's so comprehensive.
It is. It's start to finish.
There isn't a thing you don't cover in that book.
No,
really.
You're
really.
Right. Yeah. I don't. And it could be a little daunting, the size of it. And, you know, my father read it from cover to cover, he said, and he said that people need to read it actually before their cat becomes old.
I was just going to say essentially the same thing.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
good.
Because really knowing... Well, first of all, how do you know the cat is old? So for one cat who's 14, it's like people.
Yes.
You meet someone who's 63 and you say, my God, that person looks so decrepit. And then you meet, I'll say it, Dr. Jan Bellows, who's here at the veterinary conference.
Yes,
than you
wonderful.
At a, yeah, he's 72 and he ran a marathon just the other day.
Oh, my gosh, right.
And he's run 70 or some such.
Yes.
He'll yell at me if he hears this ever, because it's probably 80. I don't know how many marathons. And, you know, so you age differently. Every person does. I suspect every cat does, too.
Every cat does. And that's why I like to say that it's not a matter of how old you are, but how you are. And the AAFP says that a senior cat...
American Association of Feline
thank
Practitioners.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, they say that senior starts at 10. So senior is simply a number, right? I just turned 50 recently, and so I'm shouting that out.
But you look 32.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know.
So it's just a number.
Yeah.
But when does a person, a cat, a dog become geriatric? And in the human medicine, there's something called a geriatric syndrome, and it is when you have adverse outcomes, you have a decreased immune system, your lifestyle has to change, you become more dependent on others. And I think as a cat gets older, they could be senior and totally, quote, fine. Maybe they have a few, you know, things going wrong, but there comes a time where they're very fragile, and we have to be careful with them.
Your aunt Gertrude, say, is 148.
Mm.
Yeah, that's old.
That's old.
Yeah. And what will happen to Aunt Gertrude is she's not going to look the same or have the same. So even if she was heavy in earlier life.
She's not heavy now.
Right. So the same is true for our cats,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that one of the first things to watch for?
You might notice that. In some cats are very furry, so you don't notice it. So if you're petting your cat or brushing your cat, and if you start to feel their spine or their, you know, bones more, then that's probably a sign that they are dealing with some muscle wasting. And muscle wasting can happen just as we get older. And the number one way to avoid muscle wasting is activity and keeping them active. So if they also have pain, we have to address their pain first and then get them active with enrichment toys, with all these things, because that will help you know, slow the progression of that muscle wasting. The other thing that could cause muscle wasting is diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So if they've got kidney failure or cancer or something like that, that may be the first thing that you notice, is that they're getting skinnier and you just think, oh, he's eating less. Well, that's because he's sick.
You know, if it were up to me, and of course most things
should be.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so. Every cat parent, but especially for people that have cats, say, over 10, need a scale.
Yes.
Because you can't see, first of all, you mentioned because the cat has so much fur or hair, you can't see. But even then, you're living with that animal every day. So it's hard to notice that cat loses a pound, but a pound is significant.
It's 10%. I don't know where 30 pounds came to me, on me, right? So if I look at what I looked like 20 years ago to now, there's 30 pounds extra. But when you go through 30 years, you don't really notice it. And so that's the same thing that happens when we're looking at our cats every day. A half a pound is a big deal. So that would be like me losing, you know, I'm about 200 pounds. That would be, you know, what 10% is 20 pounds. If I lost 20 pounds, everybody would say something. But we just don't notice a little bit on a little guy.
Yeah, and they wouldn't say something if they see you every day, as opposed
to,
I haven't seen you in a year,
right.
So now I notice,
yes.
You know? So when it's your own animal, it's difficult to tell, but a scale will tell you.
A scale will tell you. And I also encourage pictures, and come from above, the pictures. So if you can get a picture of your cat from above, that's good. And just look at pictures from just simply a year ago and see the difference. It's hard, but so the scale is the best thing.
So Dr. Gardner, here's the thing. Cats usually don't tell us they're not feeling well. So how do we know? We'll find out when we come back with Dr. Mary Gardner on WGN. You've heard this on television commercials, but ain't it the truth? 9 lives are not enough. A practical guide to caring for your geriatric cat, old cat care, and pet loss. Dr. Mary Gardner, you know, I've always wondered about this. Is there a real difference between just older cats and truly geriatric cats?
Yes. So senior is simply just a number, just an age. So it's a 12-year-old cat. Full stop. A geriatric cat has got some problems. Typically, they're fragile. They may not be able to get around the house. They may be having problems with their litter box, and so that's just how they are. Mm-hmm. And that correlates also with their age. So it needs to be an older cat that has difficulties.
And the idea, and the idea would be, I don't know. You have a 3-year-old cat. Get the book now. And here's why.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm serious about that, because some of things. It's a saying in veterinary medicine, old age is not a disease, but actually that is quite true.
Yes.
So to get ahead of these things and to be aware of what to watch for,
mm-hmm.
I think is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So what we now know is that a significant percent of cats are arthritic. A significant, I mean, it was always thought, probably when you went to veterinary school, I don't know, because it wasn't that long ago. But when you went to veterinary school, you were probably taught, and I think most pet parents feel, big dogs, of course, they're going to be arthritic, because potentially, because they're big. But a small dog, never. Well, that's not true.
That's not true.
Right.
Yes.
And it turns out size has nothing to do with it. So age has a lot to do with it. Being obese or overweight has a lot to do with it. In fact, 60% of our cats are.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, there's one other thing. Being a cat,
mm-hmm.
it turns out that even 6-year-old, 8-year-old cats can be frequently arthritic. They're
yes.
slim and trim. You'd never expect it. But lo and behold, they are. And 2 years later, you see it. But the idea is, is to figure this out before you're seeing severe signs.
That's the best thing, to catch things earlier or before they happen. And same thing with humans. We start to take care of ourselves better when we've heard that we've got something. Right? So if I know in 5 years this is going to happen to me, I think I would change, you know, the way I eat, I exercise, and things like that. So you're mentioning dogs. So in dogs, obesity is the number one risk factor of arthritis. In cats, it's age. And that's also the same in humans. So humans, it's age, and cats, it's age, that we will have arthritis. But obesity adds on to that. So you have an older dog that's slim and trim. He actually will have a better chance of not having arthritis than a cat. So obese cats are definitely, like 100% are going to be. I mean, I could almost say that
Yeah.
It's 100%. They're going to have arthritis.
There's data to show that.
There's data to show that, yes.
So talk about how cats don't want us to know.
I know. I love cats. They also just have such a flippant way about some things. And they don't always complain. I mean, sometimes they complain, but they don't always complain. And they go about their day, and we don't really hear from them. A dog may whine more getting up or down. You hear a dog groan. You don't always hear a cat groan.
And they won't.
And they
don't want to.
They don't want to, right? So it might be just a flick of the tail is a little different, right? Or you're petting them and they're just, you know, a little bit twitchy or hesitant. They may not be getting up or down the couch with the ease that they used to.
And sometimes you even have to videotape those
things.
So one classic example is the cat that's not arthritic, mm-hmm. that leaps, flies, like the cat's a bird, off the sofa. Whether the cat's 6 or 8 or 12 years old, it doesn't matter. But the cat who is 6, 8, or 12 that is arthritic is going to get off the couch a little more gingerly and almost slide down.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, using its paws to grasp at the sofa.
Yes.
You can't even see that always unless you video.
100%.
So here's an idea I have.
Okay.
And you tell me if it's a good one or not. I suggest that people at the age of 6, 7 begin to videotape their cats a couple times.
Yes.
Doing things like going up and down stairs or getting off the bed. Show their veterinarian who's trained to know what to look for. And then the veterinarian, because x-rays aren't enough. Touching the animal is helpful, but not enough.
No.
And this is helpful.
It is so helpful for us to see a video like that. Even when I go to homes, and I'm blessed to go to people's homes, so I could see a lot, they may act a little different when I'm around. They're not going to be in their natural state of mind. So videoing them doing what they naturally do, and also it's just going to be a benchmark. It's like we take blood work when we're healthy as a benchmark, right? Well, we should take videos as this benchmark. And your veterinarian could spot things that you may not even notice. But the pet parent can also, when you compare from before and now,
exactly.
You'd be surprised how much you're like, wow, I never realized Rusty was having such a hard time.
Yeah.
And it's so subtle.
And the good news is more can be done now than ever before. So a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, that's complicated to give a cat. They're not necessarily approved in this country.
Right.
For cats, a lot of cats who are geriatric can't take those anyway. But now there's good news.
There is. There's some great products that are out there that was really only approved this year, like Solensia. And I've heard wonderful things it's an injectable drug, so you don't have to give
No pill. Full stop. That's great.
And I have heard some people say that their cat is acting like a 2-year-old cat again.
I've seen the videos before
it's
and after.
Crazy. It's, yes. I haven't given it to my cat yet because she doesn't, you know, she's still a little young. But I can't wait to make sure she gets the benefits of something like this.
And
the big thing is no pills,
no
caregiver aversion, because
explain what that means.
Yeah. Because when we're giving things or doing something to our pet that they may not like, they start to know. They know certain times of day. They know the sound of the fridge. They know the sound of the wrapper coming off the needle for the insulin, the shaking of the bottle, and they'll learn it if it's not done in a good way or just period anyway, right?
So what's called the fear-free approach.
I was going to say the fear-free approach. And so it's really important to learn those things so that way your cat doesn't get fearful of the procedure that needs to get done. Whether it's eye drops, whether it's a pill, whether it's a subcutaneous fluids, which many of our kitties need. And then they'll run from you. And then the human-animal bond is broken. And what's more important, trying to shove a pill down or never seeing your cat again?
And combined with the fact that the pill can be spit out.
Yes.
Oh my God, I was supposed to give that pill to the cat today? I forgot. You know, there's compliance on the human end. So this solves all sorts of different problems,
solves,
you know.
Yeah. It does. And more will come in the future.
Yeah. It's called Solensia is what we're talking about. If you could give one piece of advice to people with cats that happen to be of a certain age, what would that be?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think one thing is important besides the videos like we were saying, but diary their activities and keep track of what they're like and whether that's also respiratory rate, the weight, and monitor what you're measuring. I think we just have good days and bad days and things like that, but really write them down. And I do think bringing them to your veterinarian, I think even more than twice a year.
Yeah, I don't disagree. How about modifying the environment?
Oh, gosh. Okay, yes. So if we do start to see them having some struggles, we need to make some changes to make sure that they get around easy, get to their sunny spots, their litter boxes, and be safe from other pets in the house that may challenge them.
So cats all, if they're cats, need vertical space, but it's hard to get to that vertical space if you are of a certain age. So you're saying providing step stools or whatever
step
it might be.
Step stools, great. Yeah, there's such great products out there. You could look at even baby steps for kids to get toddlers to get up on the couch that it could be used for cats.
I use the same thing. The name of the book, Nine Lives Are Not Enough, A Practical Guide to Caring for Your Geriatric Cat, Old Cat Care, and Pet Loss, Dr. Mary Gardner. Thank you. This isn't news. It's long been suggested that our dogs look like us. Well, maybe they're kind of like us in their personality as well. A UK study looked at 16 popular dog breeds and 1,500 past and present dog parents, and they found out, yes, the traits you have are the traits of the dog you seek to have. The findings show that dog owners subconsciously do choose pups whose personality traits match their own. Positive, happy people, guess what they get? Golden retrievers, people who had strong organizational skills. They went with miniature schnauzers. I don't quite understand all of this. Are you telling me miniature schnauzers are organized? I don't exactly know what this means. For people who happen to have many interests and love risk-taking, they choose whippets. I don't get that. I mean, the biggest risk most whippets take is, do I jump on the sofa now or later? Anyway, owners who identified as extroverted and agreeable tended to pick Pomeranians. And owners identified, this is a real study, it was published, identified as loyal, friendly, and affectionate chose the Staffordshire Bull Terrier or the Jack Russell Terrier. Indeed, according to the study, 88% of owners who researched their breed before getting a dog felt their dog was the perfect match for their lifestyle. 63% of owners feel that they followed their hearts instead to determine what is right for them. Next week on the show, right here on WGN, Steve Dale's Pet World, we're going to learn about pain in cats, arthritis pain specifically, and how often it does occur. You will definitely be surprised, but there's good news. There is a new solution, a one-time drug, this is the first time, that is actually identified, approved for cats. That's not happened before. We'll talk about that next week here on WGN.